Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey, everybody. What's going on? Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, the live edition. It is December 24th. It is Christmas Eve for most people in the world. Well, it's Christmas Eve no matter what, whether you celebrate Christmas or not. That's what today is. And some people thought I was a little crazy or silly to be doing something on Christmas Eve. I know there's some people out there on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on YouTube, everywhere this is being broadcast that are, you know, going to be on here looking for something to do, maybe working or supposed to be working, but not really wanting to. Who knows? Also, you can catch this replay on the podcast. If you're catching this now and you want to hear the full episode, it's going to be on there. So for today, what I wanted to do, and I thought this would be super fun, is I have brought back a guest from my podcast, which is a bunch of what I've been doing actually on these live shows, is bringing someone on I had a conversation with before. 30, 45, 60 minutes is never enough for me, if you know at all, that I like to talk, and especially with somebody who's in marketing, which if you've noticed also, I'm bringing in a lot of people who are in the marketing space because I think marketing is so key for sales. Marketing and sales is usually some kind of drama or issue. And it's where most businesses struggle. It's where I struggle. I am great at sales. I am not a great marketer. So part of me bringing in all these marketers is to learn from them and hopefully, you know, get better at my own side. So today I have Benita Samuels, and she refers to herself as a visibility expert. And we're going to talk about all things visibility. What does that mean? We're going to talk about marketing. We're going to talk about marketing plus sales. We're probably going to talk a bit about 2021. I know that she has some interesting things planned, and we'll probably touch on that. Make sure if you're watching this, if you're listening to this, put some comments in there. Say hello if you have questions, marketing or sales related, put those in also. And let's go ahead and bring her in. Benita, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion live show.
Hey, Jason. Thank you for having me, and happy Merry Christmas Eve to you and all of our audience today. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I always say this. I say this about everyone. I am looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun, but I just always think this is fun. So for me, that's easy. So a couple things. As I was kind of doing the intro, some people were making some comments, wishing us well. So Ashwani, thank you for that. And Miss Wendy Conrad, top of the morning to you, Jason. So happy Christmas. Merry Christmas to you as well, Wendy. Anyone who isn't familiar with Wendy Conrad and you're watching this in the replay, make sure to check her out and follow her. She's all about workplace happiness. She does amazing stuff, and I want to support that for everybody, is, you know, corporate culture, happiness in the workplace, all kinds of great stuff. So, all right. So Benita, let's talk about first, what is a visibility expert? What does that mean?
Well, you know, you talk a lot about marketing. Marketing is a tool. Visibility is about being seen. You can have a great product, but if nobody knows about it, it's just a great product. You might have a great service. Again, if nobody knows about it, it's just a great service. So visibility is really about being present and being seen in all the places where your customer is hanging out.
So how is that, I guess, when you're trying to explain that to your clients or differentiate that from marketing, from maybe content marketing, social selling, all of those other terms, how do you differentiate it? How do you describe that? Where is it different, or where is it the same, but maybe, you know, slightly different approach?
I would say all of the things that you mentioned are very much tactics within being visible. You know, the other thing is a lot of people have a negative perception of marketing, and they, you know, like sales. And I think we talked about this before. People think of it as a dirty word. the reality is people understand visibility, what it is to be visible, to see somebody, to see something. And that's really where the differentiation is. Marketing, you know, old traditional marketing was an ad in the Yellow Pages. Old traditional marketing was, you know, a spray and pray mentality of direct mail. In current times, we have marketing of paid media on social platforms. But right now, we are being visible. We are being at the place where our customers and people who are interested in what we have to say are at the same time. And, you know, I tell my clients and anybody who will listen to me that there really are five places that you need to be visible. And that's the foundation. And then how you use them is really that whole part of marketing.
Okay. So if I understand it then, so visibility is the giant umbrella mindset kind of approach strategy. And then the tactics are the marketing, right? So the billboards, the direct mail, the TV, the old school, if you're thinking about it, the print ads, and then the Facebook ads, the social media, the content, the blog, the newsletter. Those would be strategies or tactics.
People are afraid of those things.
Interesting.
If, you know, it's kind of like I've done it. I've spent the money. It doesn't work.
Okay.
So if you, it's kind of like building a house. You have to have your foundation, and being visible is your foundation. It's making sure that you have the walls up, so that when you walk into the room, people know you're there.
Got it. What? So you said there was five things that you put under visibility.
Five places you need to be.
Okay.
Your foundation. So first and foremost, I say, and these, think about these. These are part of the tactical part of being visible. You have to have a website. You know, this is no new news, but there are a lot of people out there, marketers, who say you don't need a website. A website's questionable. But the reality is that it is the foundation. It's when your builder's digging the hole and putting down the cement, because that starts everything. From there, you need to have a Google My Business page. I get a lot of people who come to me and say, well, I don't have a physical address. You don't have to have a physical address to have a Google My Business page, but it is the most visible place that you can be when people search for you or search for your service. We know also that Google loves Google, and Google My Business page is free. So you're adding to your organic search by having a Google My Business page. And it also plays into one of the other places that you need to, one of the other foundational pieces is about reviews and reputation. Google reviews, Facebook reviews, very valuable, very important. So you have to remember to ask people to give you reviews so that your potential audience has an insight into what you do. So we've talked about your website. We've talked about Google My Business. I touched a little bit on reviews and reputation. The other one is LinkedIn. LinkedIn is, yes, a social platform, but it is a business platform. And it is the number one social media platform that drives business to your website. It also has a higher conversion rate than any other social platform for moving people from connections to conversations. And it has a higher conversion rate in driving business itself. Facebook has great reach. LinkedIn is much more targeted. So we said website, Google My Business, LinkedIn. Next one is making sure that you're in all your directories. So if you are part of any networking organizations or business organizations or, you know, fraternity, alumni associations, you need to put all of your listings together and have your directories up. Because again, all of these things are foundational to making sure you're visible. So if somebody searches for you or your service, you have a higher propensity of showing up. And it means you are in the places where people are looking for you. So think about it. If you're in a networking group and you need somebody in sales, if I go to my directory, and Jason, you have a listing there, you're going to be the person that I think of. And then the last one is, as I said, reputation and reviews. If you have those foundational pieces in place, you are set to do some really strong, valuable marketing.
Got it. I love that. That makes sense. And on the surface, I'm already thinking about businesses I know, small businesses, solopreneurs, you know, small service-based businesses, how that list seems overwhelming. You know, it's simple, right? It's these five simple things that should be easy. Any kind of list like that seems overwhelming, especially if you're not into marketing and that's not your forte. Let's talk about the kind of transition, you know, because this is what you do, is you focus on helping small businesses put together their visibility, their marketing, their strategies, and implement these things. Why do you think most small businesses fail with their marketing strategy, with their visibility?
Because it's not their expertise. You know, when you think about it, you know, this is kind of something that you mentioned at the top of the program, Jason, is you can sell yourself, you know, out of a paper bag, as they say. You know how to sell.
Yeah.
But marketing isn't your expertise. And yes, a lot of small businesses maybe can't afford to start with marketing. However, the reality is you need to focus on what you do, and you need to have somebody help you focus on the other things. And I always tell my small business clients, start with one thing. Because the reality is, as you said, all of those things seem so overwhelming. Start with one thing and do that well. Some of the things that I mentioned are theoretically one and done. Your website.
Right.
So if you're doing blogs, that's a routine thing. Google My Business, it's a one and done. Although I have to say, I was really excited. This happened, I don't know, about 3 months ago. Google now allows you to post content on your Google My Business page, where they used to have your images. You can now post content and put posts up. So with my clients, I make sure that we put one new post up every couple of weeks, because again, Google loves Google. And therefore, every time you put new content up on your Google My Business page, they say, oh, they
More content.
And we've heard for years about SEO, search engine optimization, making sure that you are using the right words and have the links and all of that. These kind of things that I'm mentioning are organic and help your organic traffic, which if you can't afford to do true paid SEO, these are the kind of things that help you compete against some of the other players. So the big thing, long way to get to the answer there, is pick one, and if it's the one and done, just tick them off the list. I actually have a assessment sheet of those five things. It's a 25-point checklist. When I do a full assessment for my clients, it's 125, but if any of the listeners are interested, they can certainly message me, and I would be happy to send it off to them.
And I think that's great, and I love your advice about just checking them off the box, especially the one and done, where you can do something and not have to do something over and over again, right? So like when you're putting content together, you're creating something for a blog, or you're doing those things, it can feel overwhelming, especially if it's not in your skill set, in your things that you know, get excited to do, where it's literally feels like pulling teeth. And I think that's good. I think it's also important too, to play the long game. So I know for myself, and what I've seen for some small business clients, it's like, there's all these things you should do. There's all these gurus that are telling you all these things that you should do for marketing. And it becomes so overwhelming. And then you try to start doing some of it, and you're too busy in your business as it is to do it. And the key is that I found is to just really play the long game, really be patient, really be like, okay, if this month I got this thing done, and then next month I got that thing done, and then the next month, like even if you just did it at that pace, in 12 months, you're in an amazingly different spot with your, you know, visibility marketing strategy.
You know, it's really interesting you say that, Jason, because probably 18 months ago, a connection of mine somebody I met through LinkedIn, who happens to live in my geography in the Colorado area, we became friends and we got together, and she did a post about the to-done list as opposed to the to-do list. And it's really very fascinating if you have that big list, as you say, and keep a running list of the to-dones. I actually, just this past week, started, you know, we're always very, very good about acknowledging where we may have dropped the ball.
Right.
But we're never, well, I wouldn't say never, but we're very seldom kind to ourselves and acknowledging our successes. Or if we do, it's, okay, good, now we're on to the next thing. So yeah. I actually, this past week, started to write a list of my accomplishments of this past year. And it became really kind of surprising because there are things that I did at the onset of the pandemic that have been fruitful that I have used for the last 9 months. But when I was doing my list, it didn't even dawn on me. So this year, I'm going to keep a running list of my to-dones.
Well, and what I would say is, and Todd Rooker, he has a couple comments I'm going to put up, but he says that he loves the to-dones list. What I actually did, because I heard this about halfway through this year on a podcast, where there's the vision board, there's where you want to go, right? And I'm a big supporter of that. It's what I have all my clients, all my sales people, all the teams do, so they know what motivates them, why they want to push through, right? Like, why do you want to pick up the phone that 51st time after being told no 50 times? Like, for you, like, and what you want. But the advice that I heard, and I don't remember the exact phrasing, but it was literally to create on your wall images of what you had done and where you have come from and what you have accomplished. So I have my vision board on one side, and then I actually have, because I made it in Word and I just put a bunch of pictures collage mode, but I have 5 different sheets of paper taped up on the wall, which is the things that I've done, right? Some podcasts, some, you know, blog guest posts, where my podcast was in the beginning, right? So I can look at it and go, yes, because sometimes you get stuck in it and you're like, I don't feel like I'm winning. I don't feel like I'm making traction. Even if you're in sales, right? You're like, I don't feel like I'm winning. But if you have that list, if you have that something up, you can go, yeah, I have actually done a lot. In this year, I closed 100 sales, or I closed 5 sales, or I, you know, did these things. I, you know, for me, I wrote a book. It's like, okay, that's massive. And you want to remind yourself of that so you know what you did when it feels so overwhelming, because, you know, we forget how much we actually can get done when we do it. Although there's always a perpetual list. You and I were talking about that. There's always a perpetual list. You said that you've only taken 3 days off this year. You know, and it's one of those things where it's just always more stuff than you have time for, even if you're in sales, especially if you're running a business.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I did my first vision board this past year.
Nice.
And I just, I have sitting on my dining room table. I'm taking off time next week. And I'm going to do my vision board, but you've just given me this brilliant idea. I'm going to do a blank board and put it my to-done list. Yeah. And as I accomplish things, I think I'm going to add it to the board and see where it is at the end of the year.
Yeah, I have started recommending that to everybody as well, because we lose sight and we feel like, you know, because life can feel like you're not winning in the moment, right? You said, like, we remember the times when we fall down, the times when we mess things up. Think about the, you know, times when you don't get that sale or don't get that new client, or, you know, don't have something positive happen. And you think, oh man, it's just, you know, what am I doing? Because we easily forget all the positive stuff. And it makes sense, human nature, you know, to keep us alive thousands and thousands of years ago, we couldn't focus on the positive. We have to be thinking about the negative all the time so that we don't repeat that, right? Like, eating the wrong berry could kill you. And so we want to remember not to eat the wrong berry at all times. Not that this berry is yummy. We want to stay away from that berry. And so our brains still do that. Like, oh my gosh, that was so painful. I never want to do that again. Right. I don't want to touch the hot stove because that hurt. Right. Not thinking about, okay, all these wonderful meals I had. Right. It's, I don't want to get burned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a really good analogy. And if you think about when we're, you know, talking about small business owners, it's the same kind of concept as a toddler learning not to touch the stove. We are babies or toddlers in industry or in business ownership, and the we never got that close to the stove when we were in corporate, so we didn't have to worry about that part.
True. That's so true. So we covered where to start with marketing, you know, because that was one of the things that I want to talk about. But then we just kind of rolled through that. Like, where do people start? You have your stuff on the that top five list, which for people who are watching, I put up, Todd Rooker actually wrote down everything you said and put it up as a nice summary. So that was actually perfect and covered those things. So that's a good place to start. Recapping as well for people, if they're wanting to do all those things in marketing, just take them one at a time, especially the one and done, the easy ones. So, you know, there's some people that'll say, you know, eat that frog, you know, and it's like, do the hardest thing first and then build the momentum from that. Sometimes if it's really not your forte, start with the easiest things first and build some momentum that way instead. You know, it just depends on what moves people.
The I would say of those elements, the biggest frog, as you say, or as the author, I don't remember the name of the author's name, anyway, is the website. And the reality is this. I have some clients who struggle with that so much, and you can do a single scrolling page website. Mm-hmm. As long as you have a place for somebody to go and they know how to contact you, it's really not, it sounds scary. Having done a website for Playtex Baby that had 479 different products on it, I understand it can sound scary. But most of our small business owners don't have 479 products.
Right.
And the truth is there are tons of people and places and friends and community members who can help us with that big frog. It's just as I said, one and done. And sometimes it's starting with the small, like Google My Business. It will probably take you 10 minutes.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and I think the website one is important. I'm going through redesigning my website with some help because it's one of those things. Again, I'm really good at sales. I should stay away from website design, graphic design, anything like that. That's, I try to stay away from all that. And so I have somebody helping me with my website, John Welch and Sky Mouse Studios. And we're actually taking my site, which is semi overly complicated, classic, lots of pages, lots of tabs, lots of places to go, and making it a single scrolling homepage with some other content, but mostly just everything is there. And I think the biggest thing, and he helped me understand, and I think this is good for businesses as well. Let me know your thoughts, is that, it really depends on how people are getting to the site. If you're going to build a site that's SEO and you want lots of content and the goal is to drive that organic traffic, which is a very long game and most small businesses don't have the money and the patience for or the abilities, you want a certain website. If people are finding out about you and then going to your website to validate you, then you need a whole different thing, which is usually much simpler, right?
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that 100%. If you're using your website, as you said, as a lead gen source, you need to make sure your website is showing up in multiple ways and multiple pages on search, and if you're competing. But as you said, many small businesses, myself included, my website is a point of validation. It is a place for people to check me out, although people go to your LinkedIn profile first and then to your website, by the way. You don't need to have an incredibly deep site. However, make sure that you have enough content and enough clarity that it does get recognized by the search engines, because otherwise it's just a wasted time and effort. Make sure that the beginning of the page basically answers who it is that you serve. Somebody should come to your website and the first thing that they're reading should say, oh, that's me, so that it's validating. So I agree with you completely, Jason, that I don't think that you need to have a very deep website if your service profile is not deep and if your goal isn't to win in the SEO game.
Yeah. And for me, and you're obviously, your website is up there. I was showing your LinkedIn, you know, you spend your time, you're focused on you and your clients on LinkedIn. So that's where you're at. So people make sure to check out Benita Samuels on LinkedIn and then benitasamuels.com too.
You
Go
mentioned
ahead.
earlier that you're going through your rebranding. I am as well. I'm so excited. So shortly after the beginning of the year, my website is changing. So I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, me too. Hopefully, mine probably will go live by next week. So I'm looking forward to that. And the key is, and this was the really strong point was, my site is now designed for people who find me other ways because I'm on podcasts. I have mine. There's all these different ways, and then they're coming there. It's not the point of entry for me. You know, very few people are discovering me through my website. They're discovering me.
Exactly.
So that's the point for businesses out there is, you know, there's a lot of pressure where you go to a website and you see all these pages and you got to have a blog and you got to have this, and you got to have that. If that's just that point of validation for a business or a solopreneur or a company, then like, you know, keep that in mind how deep it needs to go and how much pressure you put on yourself. And then it's an evolution, right? It's also like you can also start a page that's pretty simple, like you said, and then you can always add on over the time, right? Like adding on to a house. Next thing you know, 10 years later, you know, you've got this much larger house that you've built and live in, but it started with, you know, one room.
Right. And also keep in mind when you are building some of these things out is if you're going to do something like a blog, be committed to it because it can stale if you don't continue to produce content. So I, generally speaking, unless I'm working with somebody who's really comfortable writing, I say don't start a blog.
Yeah.
It's too much. Hey, Jason, can I ask you a sales question?
Yeah, let's do it.
You know, because you're always so generous with your time to talk about what your guests, myself included, do. But I was having this debate with somebody, and it's about sales. And so I thought, you know, this would be a great opportunity for me to get an expert here. So somebody said, and I know probably many of the listeners have heard this statement of price is only an issue in absence of value.
Okay.
Okay. So if you're not making the sale and they say it's about the price, it's because they aren't seeing the value in what you are offering.
Okay.
So, one, do you buy into that concept?
Okay.
And two, how do you get past the financial hurdle? If you know in your heart of hearts that this person really needs your services or your product.
I feel like you have a thought and an answer. So, but I'm guessing you won't tell me yours until afterwards,
no,
which is fun.
Right.
I love it. I love it how you switched up on me. So, let me answer that with what I learned years ago as a actual thing to say in a sales environment. I don't use it very often. I use it more in training to help people understand this point. So, imagine you're walking down the street and imagine that some billboard sign falls off of a building and cuts your arm off. And you're laying there, your arm has just been cut off, and you're panicked, you're freaking out, everyone's freaking out. I come by as a doctor and I say, I can help you. If you could get $5,000 in the next 10 minutes, I can reattach your arm. Do you think you could find $5,000 in the next 10 minutes? Like, would that be worth it?
Yeah.
So, okay. So, and then usually the segue is, well, then the money is not the issue. What it is the value. You just don't see the value in it. And I say that's like super extreme, like almost salesy mode. But the point is that if something is valuable enough, people will pay whatever price is associated with it. And I firmly believe most of the time it's not about price. It's not about the actual price. It's not about the money. It's the fact that they don't see the value. Now, with that being said, I've sold a lot of stuff and I've dealt with generally a lot of people who are in financial situations, trying to help them get out of financial situations. And there's literally times where you could push somebody that maybe they could afford it, but sometimes they just can't. So the general caveat is that sometimes people just literally can't afford it or shouldn't spend the money or it's not responsible or it doesn't make sense. That's a different conversation. That's we see the value, but it's not responsible to do this, right? Not worth getting into more debt or they just can't, which I think is a careful distinction that As a sales professional, you understand the difference. As a novice salesperson, you don't. And you think, again, it's a negotiation, or you think I got to push harder, or you think I got to, like, where do I buy their excuse about money and where do I not? So for me, my view, and it's funny because last week I had Kwame Christian on the show, and I've had him on the podcast before, and he is a negotiation expert. So what he does, he's the director of the American Negotiation Institute, which I didn't even know was a thing until I met him. And so they help people negotiate. And I told him that I feel like if you're negotiating on price or price comes up, then you did something incorrect. You missed a step, or you did something wrong in the conversation leading up to that point. Right. So prior to whenever that dollar amounts came up and the price came up, you missed something, which was the value that you didn't help uncover. And generally what happens in my experience is that people who are in a selling, persuading role, they're not asking enough questions. They're not going deep enough, and they're not able to correlate with their prospective customer what they want, why they want it, and then what their solution would do for them and how it would serve them or help them in where they're going, right? Sometimes it's avoiding pain. Sometimes it's, going towards a goal, right? It's not always just like, find the pain and then solve that pain. Sometimes it's like, they just want other things, right? I want a new car because I want a new car because it's going to be fun. I don't have pain. I just want a new car. Okay. Then we talk about that. So for me, whenever I see, especially consistently, somebody have a price negotiation or price roadblocks in their conversations, it's because they're not going deep enough early on in the conversation, and they're not figuring out why that person needs it. Why do they really need this, right? Like, let's say for you, if you're selling your services, like, why do they really need this? Not just like, okay, they want to make more revenue, but why? Why do they want to make more revenue? Well, they want to make it because of this. Well, maybe it's their family. Maybe it's their business. Maybe it's their pride. Maybe it's, all these other things. And then when you have the conversation, even if they say the price is an issue, well, I don't know if I can afford that. That seems high. I don't want to pay that. Hey, John, I understand that. I get that. One of the things, though, I know is that you said your goal was to X, and I know that this will help you get there. We both agreed that, right? When I showed you this and we talked about this, you said this was perfect and this would help you. So we know that this is a good fit. I know that it'll help you. It's generally not about price, and then you handle that objection. So that's
fear come into that, though, because I,
what's that?
Where does fear? Because so for me, and yes, I have a point of view. I do think I absolutely agree with you that there are some people that either where they are in their journey, mm-hmm. it's not a financial option. Although I know right. some people say, you can find the money as you did as
always.
You cut off my arm. You can find the money if you really want it. But is that responsible? Or there are right. those that have fiscal anxiety, and mm-hmm. there is a fear of spending the money. Does that also play into the concept of the value is not being demonstrated if you can't get past the fear?
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear, and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff. No long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show. I think that's a different conversation. So when we're talking about specific fears, the way that I address that is making sure that they feel super safe, right? That's the whole goal. And I use the SAFE as acronym, successful at fear elimination. And so your whole goal in sales is to make people feel safe. Humans, going back to that human brain we talked about earlier, humans don't like change. Some people say they like change. Some people are okay with change. Maybe they like change in one area of their life, but they don't like change in other areas, right? It's like, okay, I can handle change at work, but I live in the same house, in the same town. I like going to the same restaurants. Like, I compartmentalize my risk tolerance and what I like change, right? Like, I don't like change at work, but I'm totally okay just getting on a plane and traveling and doing whatever, not knowing, you know, what city I'm going to go to next after, you know, the current one. But people don't like change. If they liked change, if your prospective customer was okay with change in that moment, in that conversation, they would just tell you they want to buy and they would sign up. Those people are really easy to work with because they say, hey, Benita, I hear you do this. This is great. How do I sign up? Here's my money. Right? I know for me, I have a pretty high tolerance for change when I'm buying something and I know what I want. And then it's easy. I'm the easiest customer ever, which is like, okay, this sounds good. You know, let's go. If they don't say that, then they don't like change. And so you have to make them feel safe. For your price, fiscal fear related people, right? Because they just have that either in their past or just the way they view it, is the key is to make sure there's some safe options once the deal is done so that they know that there's some kind of, let's say, guarantee. That's where the guarantee, the money back guarantee, the kind of the promises, the requirements. You know, again, one of the biggest things with those people who are fiscally scared and they just don't want to do it is, are you going to be around, right? You're going to take their money and then you're going to be around in 2 months to even do the work, or are you just going to disappear? And so you've got to make them feel safe that you're not going anywhere, right? And whatever that looks like.
Todd actually just put a comment in that I thought was a great comment, where he said, when people don't understand something, they perceive it as a risk. That's really a great statement, Todd. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, I mean, a confused mind never buys, right? When in doubt, a confused mind will just always default to saying no. So if they don't understand, if somebody doesn't understand something, they'll generally say no. And then if they don't understand the value and they don't get it and they don't see it, they're going to say no, or they're going to say it's about price. You know, sometimes it's like my sales style, which, you know, the authentic persuasion part of me is generally like, is this about price? Is this about value, or is it something else? Mm-hmm. Cause generally what I'll do is I'll say, hey, you know, let's say it's Todd. Hey, Todd, you know, I know we talked about this. You said you wanted this. We both agreed that this would help you. In fact, we both know this will help you way more than the cost of the program. I have found that generally when people say it's about the price or the money, it's usually not, it's something else. So what is it that I can help you with? What is it that you're concerned about? You know, what is it that you might be hesitating around that, you know, might be the actual issue? I'm just call it like it is, right?
In my experience, and I appreciate you getting into this conversation, because it was quite a debate that I was having with somebody. But in my experience with my clients, I tend to find that the fear comes in their lack of confidence in their follow through.
Interesting.
Because
yeah, I could see that.
They can learn and know how to do it, or I can help them put them in all the right places. There is a fear of getting it done, doing it. It's almost even like when we talk about the five places to be visible. I just don't know if I'm going to follow through.
Yeah. And as soon as you started saying that, the best example I'm thinking is someone who just doesn't want to join a gym again. Right? I don't want to join a gym again. You know what happened last time? I joined a gym. I trained 24 hour fitness. They made me pay for 2 years in advance. I went 4 times and then I quit and I hated it. And I don't want to do that again because I know me. I know who I am. I know how I am. That's why I don't set, you know, New Year's resolutions. That's what somebody would say, right? It's like, I don't follow through. So it's not even worth signing up. It's not even the money. It's the fact that it's just a waste because I'm literally not going to do it. Right. Yeah, I don't know what you would do. I mean, with that, it's it And what I would say is interesting is if someone is really stuck in that position and someone really feels like they're not going to follow through and they're not going to do it and it's not a priority, you almost don't want them as a client, because when they don't follow through, even if they do pay you and it doesn't work, because it's all your fault. Right. It's all your fault. Yeah.
Well, what I have come to realize is, you know, and this is as we talk about evolution and moving into 2021, you know, for those that don't think they'll follow through, you need to have something in your toolbox to help them do that or do it for them, you know, or as Todd said, move on.
Move on. So, and then the one thing too, before Wendy asked a question, which I want to get to next, but one other thing, and this comes into the price, value, money, negotiation, whole kind of bucket, is one of the other things that I'm going to say salespeople, but people who are in a selling, persuading role. So like you with your own business, this could be somebody in a call center. One of the problems is they commit what I call sales malpractice. And the sales malpractice is prescription before diagnosis is malpractice. Right. So if you think about a doctor, if you walk into the doctor and say, hey, I looked it up, I went to WebMD, I have this problem, here's the meds I need, can you just give me these meds? And the doctor says, sure, sounds good. You know, here's a prescription, good luck with that. They would get in a lot of trouble, right? Like they have to go through their process. Prescription before diagnosis is malpractice. Like literally, you know, if you haven't heard that before, anybody listening, like just think about that, absorb it, write it down, and then use that. Because what happens is when people are afraid or people are worried you're going to sell or people just don't like the buying experience because of their negative buying experiences in the past, is they come out of the gate asking certain things like price. Hey, Benita, before you try to sell me anything, what is this going to cost? Right? What's the price going to be? Right. And most people are like, well, I charge this and then this, but then I also do this and like, you know, give a price and then start, you know, backpedaling and justifying and trying to do the value. At that moment, if you do that before the questions, before the discovery, and before showing the value and tying in like basically what that return on investment is going to be for them, no matter what you're selling. The problem is if you do the price conversation before all that, you've become a commodity and you've instantly left it all up to, you might as well hang up and just let them decide at that point if they want to do it or not, because you, it's going to be really hard to win if you did that. The better thing to do is to tell people, hey, you know, what I do and what I offer, the price varies based on situations, based on programs. I have lots of different options. So let's do this. Before we get into that, I want to ask you some questions and then start asking questions. Literally refuse to say a price. If they say, no, I need to know a price before we move forward, I'll usually quote them a really high price, right? So let's say whatever I'm selling normally costs $1,000 to $2,000, like when I used to work for companies before, I would tell them it's going to be, you know, $2,000 to $3,000. And then when I come back later, they'll be pleasantly surprised when it's less. But you know, advice for everyone, just do your best to never give price information, cost information, terms information until you're ready. You're the professional. Don't do it until you're ready.
Yeah.
So, cause otherwise you'll get crushed all day by people just bringing them.
You know, for those that are only buying on price,
You know, do you want them?
Right. It might be that it doesn't matter what you do. They will never see the value because their point of entry is simply price.
Yep. And then they'll also always be looking for where it wasn't worth the money, right? So they'll be looking for the issues in your service or in your product. They'll always be looking for something else that might be cheaper. So they'll drop you if you're a service provider and go somewhere else. So, you know, there's lots of things that can happen, but all right. So let's get to Wendy's question. So Wendy asks, Benita, generally speaking, because there are variables like industry and market, what tips would you give for things you should change in your marketing during a pandemic?
Well, you know, there are some tried and true and then obviously new. So first and foremost, and again, it depends on your industry and market, but people are home. So you need to meet them where they're at. So if you are in a more traditional type of business, physical mailing is actually making great inroads and being valued by the consumer right now. where things like direct mail have seen some uptick over the last few years with the millennial generation. I think that's because they are so attuned to the digital world that they have been embracing that. But what I'm finding is people are happy when they get something in the mail. And so think about some of those old tried and true, because you're not being able to go out and meet and have coffee. So that's one. The other one is, you know, what we're doing now is you have to be in the digital and social space. And if you aren't comfortable doing this and being live and talking and all of those things, that's okay. But by participating in a conversation, even with a comment in a social post, those are the places where you start to permeate and you get show your voice and your presence. The reality is, if you are in business, you need to do some form of sales, which is also a form of marketing. I mean, Jason and I will touch on that, because I do think that they are completely one in the same as far as hand in hand. So if you are in a social platform like LinkedIn or Facebook or wherever you are watching today, take the time to read other people's content and comment on it. Liking is great, but it's a very passive thing. It doesn't take any effort. And so it doesn't really create a visibility. You end up just being a little smiley face or a thumbs up, where making a comment, you start to create a relationship with those around you. The other thing is, which is really underutilized and incredibly valuable, is when you are posting content or sharing content, tag people, because they get notifications and it creates a conversation. And that's really important. So from a visibility standpoint in a pandemic, you have to be in the digital space. If you're not in the digital space, just say goodbye, because it's not that, you know, you're not going to be there. Two, consider using some traditional methods of mailing, even if it's handwritten notes and sending them to clients or potential clients. It's a lost art that people really appreciate. And then lastly, in a pandemic, the reality is that we aren't going out, we aren't networking the same way. Take advantage of all of those opportunities to meet people outside of your sphere and pick up the phone and call people. You know, it's the idea that people have shied away from the phone, and now we need that human connection. And a phone call is incredibly valuable, and it is a means of marketing. So those would be my three very baseline, simple recommendations.
I think those are great. And I think what's interesting is to watch that cycle swing so much from direct mail, right? So people like you and I, we remember it was all direct mail. That was how you did it. I've been with companies where it was mostly direct mail as the marketing strategy. And then what happens is it swing digital, right? I know even at some points in my life, like I don't even check the mail. It used to be excited and run to the mail and see what was there. Now it's like, I know what's there. It's just bills. And then how it's switched over to now what's in the mail, because it's such a rare thing. And you can really make that. And Wendy put a note in here that handwritten notes are her jam. And I also know that she's working on her video game as well. So, you know, tackling both sides. And I think that's good. So let's talk about the sales side then. Marketing plus sales.
Yeah.
Can they work together? How does that work together?
They have to work together. I don't believe you can have one without the other. You know, I think that from a sales perspective, having that foundation and what you're selling, by the way, is also a means of marketing. And as a marketer, what you're putting out there and putting together is a means of sales. So I think that it's almost like we should have one of those Brangelina kind of words that blend together for sales and marketing. Because
marketing.
Yeah, smart marketing. That's really good. Smart sales and marketing.
Yeah.
you can't. I just don't believe that they are synonymous.
Yeah, it's funny because I actually had the title of VP of sales and marketing at one point. And then I've actually heard that as more of an official term at conferences, but years before that, people would call me the VP of smarketing. because it was just, you know, one thing. And I viewed it as the same, right? It's one potential client that's going through this journey. They don't care about your silos and your departments and your feelings about everybody else. They just want help.
Right. And, you know, nowadays you hear so much about lead gen. Well, isn't that the crawling portion of the sale? Yeah. It's getting them up to the door. And, you know, it's persuasion, as you say. You have to give them a reason to want to go over the threshold. So I believe that they are a couple married forever.
That's awesome. So let's talk next about LinkedIn changes. You said there was a few. I know there's not a lot going on, but you said there was some stuff that had changed recently. You know, for anybody, you know, watching or listening to this that might be on LinkedIn, business people, sales people.
Well, LinkedIn over the last 90 days has been making a lot of changes. They have obviously changed their view, similar to how Facebook has recently changed their view, taking a kind of more gentle approach. You may or may not like it. They added in LinkedIn Live, so you can do your stories only on the mobile app. Not sure yet how that's getting traction. One of the things that just came up that they announced 2 weeks ago is they changed the word count in your about, and they moved it from 2,000 characters to 2,500 characters, which is, it's a great opportunity unless you're being verbose. The reality is by having that extra space, it gives you a chance to get people into the rest of your profile. The reality is the top third of your profile is the most important. So the added character count in your about is really good. They've added now that if you go into your notifications, you can see if somebody from your company, it will say, you know, an employee had viewed this or participated. So it's giving you some notifications of who and where your audiences are coming from. So those are big ones. And then the other big one, which I don't know if it was happened before or after we spoke last time, is your headline. You know, your headline used to be limited to 140 characters, and you could circumvent that through the app on an Apple device. Now you don't need to circumvent. You have up to 220 characters now. And that's the most valuable that is the most valuable real estate on your profile is your headline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny because I saw somebody else who had a crazy descriptive, like, you know, two words and then a space and two, like, and so I went that route and then I've gone the other way and I've kind of flipped back and forth.
Yeah. Well, it used to be even with your content, but it used to be this game of you would put, you know, a little bit of a sentence and then you would leave like three or four spaces and then put your content.
Yeah.
But because we are a world of scrollers, if you leave those spaces, they're only going to read your headline.
Yeah.
You know? And then obviously we know we're loving LinkedIn Live. You have to apply. Congratulations, Jason, because
the
people who have been accepted into the LinkedIn Live are slow to be accepted. So that's great that you're on there. So LinkedIn during the pandemic has seen a lot of changes in some of the functionality, but I think the biggest change that it has seen is the influx of new users and in some case the lack of strategy in that they are using it purely as a sales platform. And unlike other social platforms, LinkedIn, you know, prefers you to use it as a informational tool and networking engagement place. So when you are automating, they ping you. They don't push your content out as opposed to when you are posting organically. And this is an interesting data point for anybody who uses automation on LinkedIn or for sales pitches. If you are connecting with somebody on LinkedIn and you put a message in the connection request, which by the way, I should mention, LinkedIn promotes, But data this year has shown that more people ignore your connection request with a message now than those that without a message, because you have to put a message in with an automation tool. And so people are expecting that they're going to get spammed or
spammed right away. No, that makes sense. It's interesting because the rule is the general guidance is that you want to put in a message so that there's something personal, something relevant to it. But yeah, if the automation, I get those connection requests all the time where it's like, I know what's coming next. I know if I hit accept, I literally know what's going to come next. And I have a couple of people on LinkedIn I joke with, and I'll share a screenshot of a connection request, and I'll be like, okay, how much money do you want to put down, and what time frame do you think I'll get a instant sales pitch? Right? Like, yeah.
And the reality is that it's an incredible tool if you use it smartly.
Yeah. So you had mentioned, and I had actually had this prepared, but for anybody who wants to hear more of the amazing Benita Samuels, visibility expert, she was on the Authentic Persuasion Show, the podcast, episode 315, which is titled Visibility Architecture with Benita Samuels. So make sure to check that out if you haven't, if you want to just hear more of this kind of dialogue. So lastly, let's talk about 2021. You had mentioned some kind of focus plans, adjustments you were making. I thought, you know, some of them were kind of valuable, audience might help with business owners, with salespeople, with marketing. And what kind of stuff are you looking at?
I think that when anybody is looking at 2021, I think that my position is we're going to, you know, slowly move into a recovery mode. So I would say don't do too much, you know, stay tried and true, keep your focus really, you know, on the core things. And that's what I'm doing this year. You know, one of the thing I've, you know, when we talk about the pricing factor, had some discussions. I'm really excited. I'm going to be introducing a group program so that nice. You can get access and learn the valuable tool of LinkedIn and social media to, you know, up your game and move your connections into conversations. And I am kind of narrowing my focus in as well. I'm really excited. As I said, I'm rebranding, and I'll be introducing the visibility factor. Do you know what your visibility factor is? And to identify where you need to be and what you should be doing. So that's coming up for me. And I'm just really excited about, you know, moving into 2021 with a newfound purpose and direction. I told you that I've been doing a workshop with my coach and my mastermind group on 2021, and my coach Cheryl Burgett, I don't know if she's out there, we're listening. She had us rate ourselves on four key areas, and I started to rate myself, and I was giving myself scores, and then I went back and I kind of looked at my journey. And I adjusted my scores. And when we talked about it, she said to me, your success today is the result of what you did 90 days ago. And in 2021, that's going to be my mantra. You know, what I'm doing today is going to be my success in 90 days. So that's where I would leave it.
Well, and that's great. And that's great for everybody, whether business owner, solopreneur, salesperson for a company. One of the things you had shared with me, which I'll share about myself as well, is that, you know, there's times where in your business, in your sales, in your revenue, it slows down and you're just like, oh my gosh, I got to get that back up. But it's pretty much always a result of what you did 60, 90 days ago. It's not just like, oh, I had a bad week this week. It's no, you know, maybe something happened 3 months ago. Maybe you got into a little, you know, depressive spiral and didn't put in the activity. Maybe you got distracted. Sometimes for myself, I get busy with client work, so I'm not doing kind of the networking and conversations. Yeah. And then that leads to this cycle. So just always keep that in mind. And I love what you said, which is in this new year, remembering that what you do today affects 90 days out, right? And that's where, you know, that instant gratification. It's not like you're going to get on a call today and then book a client today. It's you're going to build relationships. You're going to create marketing. You're going to do visibility. You're going to get things done now that will help you in the future. And you have to, like, play that longer vision game.
Yes, I agree 100%.
I love it. Well, Benita, thanks for joining me. Like I mentioned earlier, website benitasamuels.com, new version coming soon, 2021.
Yes, so excited.
LinkedIn, obviously, is a good way to go. I appreciate you coming back. I appreciate you coming here on the live version and following up and this conversation, hopefully helping some people on this Christmas Eve 2020, which has been a fascinating year for most everybody. So I appreciate you coming back on.
I so appreciate you having me, Jason. May you have a wonderful holiday and, you know, a prosperous and healthy 2021, I say with thanks and gratitude.
Yeah, and I keep wanting to say, hey, 2021 will be a better year. We all thought 2020 was going to be an amazing yet decade and year. I mean, it is what you make it. So appreciate you. Thanks for coming. Everybody watching and listening, thank you for catching us. If you watch this live, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's. If you're listening to the replay, whenever you do, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Hopefully 2021 is a great year for you. And I'll catch you on the next conversation about authentic persuasion. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.